Welcome back to Open House with Mark Sewick and Corey James Moran, brought to you by the Mark Sewick team at Keller Williams, a Greater Rochester real estate podcast. And we've made it to episode 10.
Yahoo!
Honestly, Mark, be very honest. Did you think we'd make it to episode 10 when we started?
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah, okay. I did. I honestly did.
All right, good. Today...
The better question, did you?
Sure, yeah, totally. No.
Okay,
yes,
good.
Yes, of course. Obviously, of course. We have so much to share. Thank you again for joining us today for episode 10. We originally wanted to talk about screening tenants because of last week's episode where we talked about investing in rental properties. And Mark shared some of his trauma with us, your past trauma of being a landlord and some of the terrible things
happened. Oh, I didn't even begin to scratch the surface, Corey.
I'm sure.
Yes.
I'm sure. But we talked about investing in rental properties, and that was a topic that came up in the tail end. And we'll devote an entire part of this podcast to emotional support iguanas, I promise you. So we'll get
you remembered.
To that. So we'll get to that. But I actually had an experience this week, actually late last week and again on Monday of this week, where I'm helping several clients who are moving in from out of state who aren't quite ready to buy a house yet, so they want to get settled with a rental.
Okay.
The process that I've been taking them through, and this is not normal, as far as I know anyways, is a little insane. And we'll get into all that in a second. If you did miss last week's podcast, you go back and take a listen. We certainly encourage you to do so, especially if you've even considered the thought of investing in rental properties, because as we stated last week, people need more avenues for their retirement, and this is certainly one to explore.
And it's a great vehicle, absolutely,
yep. Absolutely. Before we get into the episode for this week, let's get a little market update. So again, I like to pull those current numbers, and a little bit of an uptick, not a ton, but a little bit. 515 current active listings
there
at the time of this
reporting. We broke 500. That's
so
remarkable.
That's up from 466 last week.
Yeah.
So a decent little jump. That's for just Monroe County. And then for the six-county region overall, 921 active listings, again, as of this recording. That's up from 856. So seems like things are getting a little bit more active.
Well, in terms of the listings.
Yeah.
However, I still contend that there are a lot of buyers who are just lying beachside, enjoying margaritas, just trying to bake some of the spring cold out of their system. People who are just frustrated by the fact that they weren't successful earlier in the spring when they were trying to purchase property. And I think that people are really, really intent. We talked about all this last week. I think that people are really intent on re-engaging with family and friends that they haven't seen in a year and a half.
So that's what I'm seeing too, a little bit of buyers kind of drawing back, taking maybe a little bit of a break, just a breather from it, which if you're still in the mix or if you're thinking about getting in, now would be a good time because
right.
You can take advantage of the fact that there's not quite as many people flocking. Now, when we say this, put it into perspective, because as we've been saying throughout the last 10 episodes, it's still crazy out there. It's just not as crazy.
Right. It's all a matter of what it is you're comparing
right.
the market to. So when you're comparing today to what was going on 3 months ago, the best market for
yeah.
sellers ever in the history of real estate, well, then, of course, everything is going to pale. So
absolutely. So still, if you are looking to sell, still a really good time to, obviously. We're just seeing that things aren't quite as wild as they were. So interesting to see how things progress, and if your prognostication is correct that by September you think maybe that's when people will start to really dive back in, and we'll see maybe, do you think it's going to get back to the level that it was?
No, I don't think that it'll get back okay. to the level that it was, but there's still this incredible demand out there on the part of buyers to purchase. Buyers are desperate to buy property, so once they've knock back a few margaritas, a few mojitos. Once they've licked their wounds after this past year, this past spring's battle, then they'll return. I'm certain they'll return. I just don't think it's going to be as insane as it was.
Sure, got it. Okay. Before we do dive into the episode for this week, we do not have an international market update today, unfortunately. Our international takeover is on pause. Apparently, our takeover is on the beach. It's having margaritas as well. So no new countries to add. So I will ask this of our listeners. If you're listening right now and you know of someone that lives in another country, tell them to listen to the podcast. At least 1 minute of it. That's all we need.
I'm going to plead. I'm going to beg because it really was fun over what a 4 or 5 week period of time
yeah.
to see. By the way, I need to apologize to you and
oh.
to our my allergies.
Oh yeah.
Are killing me. So if I'm coughing, if I'm wheezing, if I'm hacking over the course of the next half hour, my apologies. It was so bad, Corey, that this past Sunday, I woke up at 6 a.m, as I often do. Between 6 and noon, I took 2 naps.
Ooh.
3 p.m.
Another nap.
An hour-long nap.
Wow.
Insane.
I gotta I'm not jealous of the allergies. I'm jealous of the 3 naps in 1 day.
That was pleasurable, save for the fact that the other 21 hours of the day was fairly miserable.
Sure,
so,
yeah, all right, so it all evens out. All right, so yes, if you know someone who lives in another country, please have them listen to the podcast so we can talk about fun facts and I can do my research.
And I can continue to needle you about wooden shoes.
See, even when we don't have one to add, he brings it back. All right, let's jump into today's episode, which again we are going to be talking about screening Tenants, but I also wanted to share this experience. Maybe I can lead off with this, because again I don't believe that this is necessarily something that's been happening for a long time, but I have several clients who are coming in from other states, and before they buy they like to rent first to get settled and give themselves a little bit more time, which makes
sense. Learn neighborhoods, that kind of thing.
Absolutely, right. For sure, which is totally fine. The amount of, and specifically apartment complexes that I've taken them to, where it's the expectation that we're going to show you a floor plan, we're going to show you some photos, maybe we'll show you a 3D tour, and then you're expected to sign a lease, is mind-boggling to me.
Why are they, and this is brand new information to me, I did not know this was going on, why aren't they walking prospective tenants through apartments?
They don't have anything. There's either... A lot of these don't have models.
So wait, are you suggesting, here, sit down with us for 10 minutes, we're going to show you a model of an apartment that you can't sign a lease to rent?
Yes, yes.
Well, why the hell would anybody want...
Great question.
Well, okay.
But here's the thing. It's similar to the real estate market and buying, and specifically buying, is that people are willing to do it. And well, that is why it's happening.
But I think that people are willing to engage in the process because they know that there's actually a house that is available for them to purchase. But I'm having a little bit of a hard time sitting here wondering why the hell anybody would want to sit through a presentation and a conversation about an apartment that doesn't actually exist for them to rent. That's a bit hard to comprehend.
In one specific situation, we were told by the manager that, it's going to be coming up for rent here. But we're changing things up. There's some paint buckets in there, so I can't show it to you. And look, I get you want to present it in the best possible manner, but when you have nothing to present to a prospective leaser, I mean, it's crazy to me. And it's certainly very unnerving for anyone who wants to find a place to live. It's just, I guess what I was struck with was the almost cavalier attitude about it.
Yeah.
Right? I mean...
We saw that this past spring... With sellers who were incredibly cavalier in their behavior toward buyers,
right?
Then you're experiencing the same on the rental side of things.
When it comes to, and I understand, look, when you get into a business, you can become desensitized a little bit, and maybe you can lose sight of a bigger picture, which is something that we really try not to do in our field, and specifically with our team, because of the fact of this is their house, this is their apartment, this is the place they're going to live. This is, we talk about all the time. It's so much more than just four walls and a roof. It's their lives, their futures, right?
It's their safety, it's their comfort at the end of a long day, all of that, yes.
And I'm going to be honest, I was almost insulted for them that it was like, here's some photos, sign the lease if you want it, go and take it.
A hubris never plays, it doesn't matter whether it's real estate, it doesn't matter whether it's politics, we're seeing a lot of that of late, we don't need to get into that.
Sure.
As
much as you would love to.
As much as I would love to. But hubris never plays as a long-term strategy.
Yeah.
Never. So I'm sorry for your sake, but in particular for your clients, that's unfortunate.
And then my advice to them has been, well, if that's the attitude that they're going to be presenting to encourage you to live here, what do you expect from your living experience? And that has now weighed heavily in on their decision of where they want to live.
And thank you. That's exactly what I'm saying. Hubris is just not a great long-term strategy.
So if you're out there trying to find a place to rent, good luck to you as well, because it's difficult, obviously.
Indeed, yeah.
It's crazy. No, there's nothing. No, nothing to see. Can you imagine? No. Here's just some photos. Actually, not even photos. Here's just a floor plan. Just imagine what it looks like and smells like and if everything that you have will fit in there.
It really is hard. It's hard to imagine.
So now let's look on the other side of that, and this is what we said we were going to talk about when we finished the podcast last week, and that is going to the side of the landlords, of the property managers, screening tenants. Mark, this is something, again, that you're very passionate about, having so many rental properties.
Having fallen on my face for the years on end that I did until I learned how to screen tenants. You're right.
And learned the hard way, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah. My God.
So let's dive into it. Where to begin?
I could begin in one of two places. You get to choose.
Okay. Choose your own adventure. I like this.
Okay. One, I can tell you the three means by which you can have an easy go of it as a landlord. There are three things that you need to do. That's very simple. That's one. Two, I can tell you a little bit about my experiences before I learned how to screen tenants.
Okay. Let's go with the experiences first. We'll lead with experience, and then we will get to those three.
It was, in short, miserable.
Okay. Honest. Well, if you were listening to the podcast last week and you heard the story Mark shared, yeah, I think that's probably.
In case you didn't listen, my very first rental property, the first day that I owned it, my downstairs tenant took a steak knife and embedded it in the chest of his best friend and murdered him on the front lawn. So it only gets better from there.
Well, there you go.
I think that the experiences that I had were really awful. Constantly chasing tenants down for rent.
Oh, yeah.
Tenants moving out and then having to spend thousands of dollars cleaning up after the mess and the destruction that they would leave behind. It was really ugly, and it was exhausting, and it was expensive. But for some reason, I just kept thinking that it was going to get easier, and indeed, it did. And I think it comes down to it, and I'll get into specifics in a little bit.
Okay.
But it really does come down to, and perhaps this is the better way of approaching it, all you have to do is three things. One, pull a prospective tenant's credit report. Two, don't lease to anybody who smokes.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
And three, don't lease to anybody who has animals.
Okay.
And if you just abide by those three tenets, you'll have a great experience. And as I was thinking about, as I was preparing for this, or thinking about this earlier today, you have to. Rental properties are living, breathing entities. You have to feed them, and they are going to be fed in one of two ways. Either you're going to take money out of your pocket as you own the properties, and you're going to feed the monster and paint when tenants leave, put in new countertops, refinish hardwood floors. That's one form of expense. The other is just to ignore the monster, if you will, and you are then going to be paying with the passage of time. You will get poorer quality tenants. You will be they will be paying you less money. You will suffer greater amounts of vacancy. You will be spending money on court fees and legal fees as you're trying to evict tenants. And then ultimately, when it is that you are finally so frustrated and so angry and so exhausted by the practice of owning rental property, you will eventually sell it, and you will sell it for pennies on what it is you could have sold if you had just done the right thing to begin with,
sure,
which is improve the property as you're going along.
Makes sense. I mean, you talked about it a little bit last week of, what did you call them? The duct tape heroes?
I'm not even sure what I used, but I'm sure it was colorful.
Yeah. So. You just kind of patch along the way.
Right.
But to do it right the first time saves you in the long run. So that kind of echoes that a little bit.
Absolutely. And I think there's a corollary to all of this. My first few rental properties were in the 19th Ward. The U of R and the city had just completed the pedestrian bridge connecting the 19th Ward to the University of Rochester. So I was renting to a lot of students at the time.
Okay.
And it was tough. It was brutal. I mean, these kids, they would show up, four guys, they would show up with their furniture, which was usually a mattress, right, a futon, that kind of thing, and a keg. And a year later, they would leave. If I was lucky, I would have them for two or three years. But with the passing of time, I paid all of them off. I paid my dues. I paid them off. I took the money and I started buying on the east side of town. And so buying the best neighborhood that you possibly can, and we touched on this very briefly last week, buying the best neighborhood that you can, because that in and of itself is going to help to ensure that you're going to get a better quality tenant. And as a result of having a better quality tenant, you'll have a little bit more money in your pocket at the end of every month to reinvest in the rental, in the property itself.
What was it like from a psychological aspect for you? Because these are properties that you own, that you worked.
It was infuriating.
Yeah.
Yeah, you don't even need to finish the question. It was infuriating because at the time I was 25, 26 years old. I had no money in my pocket. I don't come from a family who had any money. All that I had was my drive and my desire, and I would, week after week after week, just roll up my sleeves, and I would spend weekends just renovating these properties, removing wallpaper, painting them out, and then you come back a week and a half later, and somebody's punched a hole in the wall because they got upset or excited over a keg party.
Right.
It was very, it was awful. So
yeah, doesn't seem like a lot of fun. And it had to be tough in those early years too, because you said one of the big things that's really important is pulling a credit report. Now, if you're leasing to a lot of college students, probably not a lot to pull from there quite
yet. Well, at
yet.
That point in time, I wasn't pulling credit reports because I didn't
know.
Any better. At that point in time, I didn't know to pull credit reports. I didn't know that I should not rent to people with animals or that I should not rent to people who smoked.
Mm-hmm.
And I ran into her last night. Her name is Julie. I will save her. I ran into her last night. I learned so much from an old friend who was selling real estate with me, and her office was two doors down. And Julie owned a lot of rental property at the time. I used to sit because I was afraid of my own shadow when I first started in the business. And I
really?
Yeah. I could not look anybody in the eye, and I could not be direct with them.
Hmm.
And so I used to sit and listen to Julie. And she didn't know that I was listening in, but I was learning from her. And I'll never forget a conversation she had with a prospective tenant. Do you have animals? No. How's your credit report? Great. Do you smoke? Call me when you quit. Click.
Seriously?
And Julie, I know that you're listening to the podcast. I learned so much as a result of sitting in my office listening to you. And I was like, my God, that's how you do it. And so I may later on, I apologize to those who are listening, I may actually ask Corey to delete this portion of what I'm about to say. But I remember one tenant, I was so frustrated, tossing and turning in my bed at night. It's 2 a.m, 3 a.m, and I had a tenant who was a student who was just evading me. And he, every time I would show up, he wasn't there. Every time I'd call, he'd say, great, I'll drop it off later today. And he was 3 months behind in his rent.
Yeah.
3 a.m, I realized he's home now.
No.
I drove over to the rental property, 257 Barton Street. I had the key. I let myself in. I walked upstairs to his bedroom. I opened the door and I said, where the hell's my money? And I got my money. And it was on that day, that very moment, that I learned how to be a landlord.
Yeah.
But what was great about that experience was that clearly and obviously, I don't want to be a 56-year-old guy, and I don't want that to be the means by which I'm managing my rental property.
Sure.
And it was from that day moving forward that I actually learned, you know what, there's got to be a better way of doing it. And that's how I started to pull credit. That's when I started to learn to pull credit reports.
So the credit report one's pretty self-explanatory.
Right.
People are going to pay if they pay their other bills, typically.
Well, yeah, and can I riff on that for a moment?
Yeah, of course.
Okay, so it doesn't matter. What I learned, I started pulling credit reports, and as a result of pulling credit reports, suddenly I had greater tenants. But then I fell prey to these stories. Well, you don't understand, my husband and I just got divorced. Or you don't understand, you know, I just came from the hospital where I fill in the blank. And what I soon realized was that I have no problem renting to anybody who's divorced or anybody who spent time in the hospital. You either do so and you pay your bills and you've got a good credit report, or it doesn't matter what the story. There's always a sob story.
Sure.
And so if somebody's got lousy credit, I just don't rent to them.
Mm-hmm.
And if they've got good credit, then I rent to them. But so you can't fall prey to the sob stories because the credit report tells you everything that you need to know about these individuals as prospective tenants.
I mean, when it comes down to it, it's a business.
And it's a business. It's not a welfare agency.
Exactly. And certainly you can be empathetic to
my
people.
My favorability, oh my God, I'm just like plummeting. People are going to listen to this.
But it's how you have to be, or otherwise you're going to get walked over and
right.
You're going to have people that aren't going to pay you to live there. And then
exactly.
You're the victim in that situation.
And then I don't have the ability, as I do now, to renovate properties throughout the city. There's a property on Vic Park B. As a result of the success that I've enjoyed, I was able to take a rooming house, a brothel, and a drug house, four contiguous buildings in Vic Park B in the Park Avenue neighborhood of the city. It runs between Park Avenue and East Avenue. And literally 49 units in four buildings, drug dealers, prostitutes. It was just, just terrible. And as a result of my ability, my success in becoming, in learning how to become a landlord, I was able to take and evict all 49 tenants. We now have 24 units.
Okay.
And they're great units, beautiful kitchens, beautiful tile bathrooms, nicely refinished hardwood floors. They're in great condition. I was able to benefit that part of the city. The neighbors were so grateful.
Yeah.
And I've got great housing stock that I'm able to rent to those who are looking to rent a nice apartment in the Park Avenue neighborhood of the city.
Now let's go to point two, another self-explanatory one. The smoking thing, the smell. If you're not a smoker and you've ever walked into someone who smokes their house, you know immediately. And I'm guessing, Mark, that smell either doesn't come out or it's very difficult.
Very, very, very difficult. You have to... Kills is a product that you paint, and it takes stains and it encapsulates stains. So you got to Kills. Yeah, you got to encapsulate. And it's very, very hard to breathe when you're painting with Kills. It's very hard to breathe because the smell is so toxic. So you have to paint the entire place in Kills. You have to usually replace carpets. It goes on and on. But thankfully, we've got a couple of property manager and a couple of maintenance guys. And so if they're smelling somebody who's smoking, boom, I'm immediately made aware. And they are usually asked to leave immediately. But again, it doesn't happen.
Right.
Sure. We're lucky.
Now, the final one. Yes. This is the one that we teed up a little bit last week.
Yes.
With animals. And specifically, again, you go back to the sob story situation. I'm sure you hear it all the time, the story of the comfort iguana.
Yes. Yes. Now, before I go into this, indeed, there are men and women who do need a comfort animal. And I'm very, very respectful of that. And if we get somebody who legitimately needs a comfort animal, we are going to allow that man or woman to live with a dog, a cat, whatever the case may be. There's trauma out there. This is a thing. Unfortunately, 95% of the time, somebody says that they have a comfort creature and they've got documentation, and I already know where it's going. And I alluded to this last week. There is a company out of Utah. You're 23 years old, and you suddenly decide that you see Sally Struthers and her infomercial about, poor animals. So you suddenly decide that you want to have a dog or a rabbit or an iguana or a cat, and you write a check or pay $35 to this company, and they will issue a certificate stating that we hereby certify that Susie Smith has a psychological need to have a comfort animal. And it's a mimeograph signature, and they bring these documents to me or to our property manager, and they are insisting that these are legitimate documents, and these documents prove that they need to have a comfort animal. And it's just infuriating because it's so incredibly disrespectful to those men and women who actually do need these animals.
It minimizes their struggle.
Yes.
When you make a fake fake like that, unfortunately. And look, animals are great. Okay, they are.
Okay, so I mean, you look at my travel photos.
Yeah.
There's never a photo of me standing in front of the Eiffel Tower. There's never a photo of me standing in front of the Leaning Tower. Or it's always me with my arm around some animal. Like, I love animals. I mean, and you've seen me like rolling around the floors with dogs and cats. And
got a cat of your own.
Yes, exactly.
But I think that's the perspective that a lot of people don't necessarily have, right? When it comes to I'm renting an apartment, they feel as though this is my space. And while you're renting it, sure, it is your space, but you're going to leave someday, and there's going to need to be somebody else that comes in. And if you're bringing in 19 ferrets and raccoons and Lord knows what, that is going to make it a whole lot more difficult.
Sparky, the three-month-old dog, the puppy. Yeah. I mean, that puppy is going to chew on hardwood floors and scratch on hardwood floors, and there's a lot of smell that you got to deal with, and a lot of issues. So, and then once you get that one, all of a sudden every other tenant in the building wants the exact same thing.
Of course.
So it's very, very, very simple to find out when it is that a tenant has a pet, because every other tenant in the building suddenly says, well, yeah, but apartment 3B has the iguana.
Right.
Why can't I? So easy.
Yeah, it's not just managing properties; it's managing people.
And thank God Adrian does this. Adrian's great at managing our tenants, both in terms of screening them, but making sure that the apartments are in great condition. You know, you've got a light bulb that's out, great. You know, call and we'll take care of the light bulb. But he also makes sure that we're taking care of them emotionally and otherwise, that they're in a good place.
Absolutely. So some three tips there again: pull credit reports, no smokers, no animals, and you're going to find yourself having a much easier transition. Don't go through the hard times that Mark had to experience to learn that. Just start off the bat with that.
Absolutely. My lord.
And again, I think it encompasses it into as well, it's treat it for what it is. It's a business.
It's a business, right.
When it comes down to it. And don't feel like you're not being empathetic or not being sympathetic. You're just treating it like a business. And that's going to be the key to your success. I mean, I guess you can have one or two. You can listen to the sob stories and fall for them. Or you can make money and thrive and be successful at being a landlord.
And then use your success to leverage philanthropy.
Yes, exactly.
Renovate properties, help to improve neighborhoods, et cetera. Absolutely.
So a little lesson there. I thought the natural next step, maybe for next week on the podcast.
Yeah.
Because this is a word.
You make it so easy. Honestly, you make it so easy. Thank you.
So this is a word that when people think real estate, it's probably one of the first things that come to mind. And I thank HGTV for this one. The word flip.
Oh, okay.
Should we dive into some flip talk next week on the podcast?
Sure.
Because, again, I hear from so many people, and that is something I hear all the time. Well, I'm looking for a flip. I'm looking for a property that I can buy cheap, fix it up real quick, and turn it around. Similar to investing in rental properties, I'm willing to bet that this is an easier said than done sort of situation.
I've been doing this for 30 some years. I flipped one property.
Really?
One.
Wow. Okay.
And I was sued.
So it went great. It was.
They lost, but.
But still.
But still, I was, yeah, somebody tried to sue me. I mean, you know, it was 3 months worth of effort and I made $10,000.
So it wasn't worth it? Are flips the get rich quick scheme of real estate? I'm being serious.
I think that last week I referenced, again, you're younger than I am, but for those who are older than Corey, you know, anybody who's in their 50s, 60s, you remember the guy with a ponytail 3 a.m. telling you that he can teach you how to buy 100 rental properties in the next, you know, 6 months. There's a corollary to that. There's also the guys who tell you that, you know, buying properties and flipping them is boom, quick and easy money. Then the margins are so narrow.
Yeah.
And it's all about carrying costs.
I'm going to dig in and do a little research on this one, and we'll come back next week. All right. Sound good?
It sounds great.
All right. As always.
Man, you are, I'm disclosing way too much here. I'm disclosing way too much.
You're doing great. It's awesome. Love it.
So,
as always, if you want to find out more about the team, if you're interested in buying or selling or investing or maybe flipping, if you want to go down that road, you can come and check out the website, marksiwiec.com, MarkSiwiec.com. You can always reach out to me directly at 607-341-1230. Go to the website to check out our listings. Again, there's stuff coming down the pipe. More things
indeed,
to check out.
Indeed, there is.
So as always, thank you for listening. Thank you for telling your friends to listen. It certainly helps it. And again, our final plea, if you know someone living in another country, send them the link to one of our podcasts.
I want one of the stands. I am desperate to be listened to in one of the stands.
That is the dream. So we'll talk to you again next week with Open House with Mark Siwiec and Corey James Moran.
Thanks very much.
Thanks for listening.